What's up, everyone, and welcome to Indianapolis. It's day six of the 2011 NFL Scouting Combine. I'm your host, Joe Fortenbaugh. Wes Bunting is in the house as well. We are here live from Indianapolis to bring you the scoop on everything that's been going down. We're going to bring Wes in to talk about reactions, what he's thought of some of the top players this week, who's stepped up, who's failed to deliver. So sit back and relax for the next 20-plus minutes or so as we're going to run through everything we've seen and heard this weekend out of the Midwest. Wes, what's going on, my man?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you, man?
Are you sure you're doing well? Because I've been hearing all about this sickness you've been dealing with this weekend. You sound like how I sounded coming out of the Senior Bowl last night.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to play through the pain sometimes. And here at the NFP, we always try to put the best foot forward, give you guys the best information. I got to, you know, just get after it. That's what we do.
A true team player is what you're trying to say you are.
Absolutely.
All right, well, look. Today, the defensive linemen got out there and ran. They've been working out. The linebackers, they follow. It's Monday afternoon as of right now, so the D-backs are going to go tomorrow, and then we're going to put a bow tie on this thing as the 2011 Combine will come to an end, and we'll get ready 6 weeks, 7 weeks, whatever it is, 8 weeks from now, the 2011 NFL Draft will take place from New York. So let's start with some basic stuff. Which players, as of this point, have really stood out to you? You came here, there's over 300 prospects here in Indianapolis. Which guys have stood out, made an impact, guys that have really caught your attention?
Well, if we want to start with today, Joe, and a guy we were just finished looking at is Von Miller, the Texas A&M product. Comes in about 11 pounds heavier than what he was at the Senior Bowl, runs 4.5. I just got done watching him during the position drills. He's fluid. He clicks and closes well. Guy can play, I think, as an outside backer in a 43, but he's going to make his bread and butter as a 3-4 outside linebacker. Going back to the offensive lineman, I think Anthony Costanzo had a really good week. He's athletic.
He ran a good tackle Boston College. Yep. I'm just going to slip that in there.
I got you, big guy. And, you know, usually you don't think these offensive linemen are great athletes, but he really did a nice job. And I'm going to have to give Snake Eyes Matt Bowen and his Iowa Hawkeyes some love. Adrian Claiborne and Christian Ballard both ran well today, looked fluid during position drills. I think Claiborne is an absolute first-round pick now, and I think Ballard, because of that 4.7 40 time, he's got a chance to go in the late first round, early second round as well.
D linemen were putting up some lightning-fast times at Lucas Oil Stadium today. We'll come back to that in a minute. Let's go back to Von Miller, the outside linebacker from Texas A&M. People have been raving about him since his performance at the Senior Bowl, but those like you, those that follow this stuff for a living, that are really in tune, you've known about him for a couple years. The guy made plays. He started last season a little banged up, so he got off to a bit of a slow start, but the guy finished strong. He's a big-time playmaker at the next level, and he continues to show up in these situations and impress. He has good press conferences. He practices hard. He beats guys. He puts up good 40 times. Like, he just keeps doing everything you want to see him do. Is he one of the top five prospects in this year's draft?
I think so. And we have him, I believe, number five on our board right now. And you talked about that slow start, Joe, and that's what a lot of people, the concern with him is. Well, you look at why did he have a slow start, and he was coming off an ankle injury, and instead of just packing it in, getting himself ready for the NFL draft and the next level, the guy says, you know what, I'm a team player. My team needs me out there, bad wheel or not. He plays through the pain. The rehab takes a little longer than it really should have. Then he finally gets healthy and absolutely dominates. Again, I think he gives you some scheme versatility in a 34 or 43, but I think his calling card is rushing the passer. Great first step. Flattens out around the edge as well as anyone in the draft. You can never have too many pass rushers in the NFL, and I think number five of the Cardinals is a real likely spot for him come draft day.
Like a lot of people have been saying, projects to play the same position and play as a similar type player to Green Bay's Clay Matthews, correct?
Yep.
The outside pass rushing linebacker in a 3-4 system. Arizona would hit big on that. That would be a guy that could really come in. And you know what, for as bad as they were last year, The offense is what really killed them. The defense wasn't all that bad. There's still some talent there. You've got Darnell Dockett. You've got Rodgers Cromartie in the secondary. Adrian Wilson, guys of that nature. So, you know, it's a defense that with a guy like this, an impact player can rush the passer. They can try to, you know, make some moves back in an NFC West that we know, quite frankly, is kind of wide open for the taking. Just a quick note before we move on. Von Miller, it was an unofficial 4.46 he ran today. Wow. Was the better of his two times. What was the second one?
I think 4.50 flat.
4.50. All right. The officials will be announced shortly, so we'll be sure to keep you updated on that. Now, on the other side of things, who are some of the players that you came into Indianapolis thinking you were either hoping you'd see a good week out of them, or you thought you were going to see a good week out of them, but somehow something went south and you just didn't get what you expected? The guys who, you know, maybe their stock took a bit of a hit.
Well, we'll start with today again, Joe. Alan Bailey, who we've been hyping up as the second coming of Hercules, this guy was going to be 285. He was going to run in that 4.6 range. He was going to bench press 45 reps. He ran in the 4.7 range today. We know he's stiff, but we expected him to at least give us something as a straight line athlete. When he doesn't do that and he's inconsistent on tape and at the Senior Bowl, it really discouraging to watch him. Speaking of slow 40 times, Akeem Ayers from UCLA. This is a guy who we thought at 6'4", 255 pounds, was going to be able to run in that 4.5, 4.6 range. He runs two awful times in the 4.8 range. Now, I watched him during position drills. He was fluid, had a burst, changed directions well. But we know, and Bowen talks about this all the time, further you get away from the football, more important the 40 time is. And Akeem Ayers at 4.8, that could end up keeping him out of the first round.
And he was a player a lot of people projected in the first round, us included, websites all around. He's one of these linebacker prospects that people, they like him. They think there's a lot of prospects there. And who was, correct me if I'm, Brandon Spikes, the linebacker from Florida, he had a lot of prospects for a second round last year, I believe it was, ran a miserable 40 and kind of plummeted until the Patriots decided to take him a few rounds later. So, again, it's not the most important thing, but a bad time can certainly hurt. Where do you see him right now? Do you think this is enough? Obviously, these guys aren't putting things on tape this weekend. They're not playing football. They're doing a lot of running, jumping, as we all know, etc. But, you know, is this time? Do you think this is going to cost him some money?
Absolutely. And when we talk about what this 40 time can do, it doesn't mean he's a worse football player.
Right.
And I'm not going to go back and move him down because he didn't run fast at the combine, because he plays fast on tape. But at the same time, the stopwatch is key for these guys where they get picked in the NFL draft. Like you said with Brandon Spikes, he ran an over 5-second 40 last year, fell into the Patriots late in that second round range. So I think Akeem Ayers, right now, we were thinking mid-first, maybe even towards the early portions of the first round. At 4.8, no way he goes that high. I'm thinking late first, maybe early second now. But if you can get him early in the second, you're getting a heck of a deal at a good outside linebacker.
Last year, the big ticket was Tim Tebow, as we all know. His media day was swamped by pretty much everyone in the house. Everyone was keeping an eye on him, updating everything he did. This year, it's Cam Newton. No surprise, another SEC quarterback who plays similar to Tebow in that he was able to do a lot of running, effective with the football in both phases of the game, scored a lot of touchdowns inside the red zone. Newton comes in, the place goes wild. In fact, he's one day delayed on his press conference, so everyone is just even more intrigued to talk to this guy. Reads a prepared statement, which is the only guy in the combine doing something like that. Gets up on the podium, addresses the questions, very personable. Runs an official 4.59, impresses there. He's a physical freak out on the field through all the drills, but then he's got to throw the ball. And you and I got into the workouts yesterday. The Pro Football Writers Association is able to work something out where they get some of the writers in to watch some of the workouts. So we got to watch him throw. He was missing badly, especially on his out patterns. What did you see there?
Well, it's something that I've seen on tape, and I saw at his pro day, is that when you look at that plant leg or that front leg, as a quarterback, Joe, you know, you want that pointed in the direction of where you want to throw the football.
Oh, yeah, I've been down that road before. My mechanics, as I told you before, were stellar, with the way my release was slightly below my hip, with a trajectory that was much like an underhand softball pitch.
So when we look at Cam Newton, we see that plant leg consistently somewhat behind the target he wants to throw to him, which forces him to throw across his frame, which is one of the main reasons why he's either inaccurate or balls sail on him. And we see that particularly when he has to work from the 3- and 5-step game from under center, where that footwork, like you were talking about, on that out pattern is so important. Now, when he can throw bucket throws down the field and rely more so on that upper body and touch down the field, he does a better job because he can rely on the arm strength and his strong arm. But underneath, where he has to be precise and accurate, not only with his arm but from the waist down, struggles, causes him to be a bit inaccurate.
Like we see with the combine every year, the smallest of things, people go wild with them. And that's just how the media is. People cover events like this. They're going to report on events like this. They're going to give opinions on events like this. Cam Newton was a huge story yesterday. Everyone was killing him. It was an awful workout. Was it really that bad? Some balls sailed on him. Everyone's not going to hit on every single pass, especially with receivers you've never worked with before in your life. In fact, you might not even have two reps with them during the entire day because they keep shuffling guys in and out. So is this really a big concern? Obviously, any coach that drafts him knows this is a guy that needs to be coached up. He needs to be worked on. He's got all the skills, but he needs to be developed into a pro-style quarterback. So how much is this going to hurt him in reality?
I mean, honestly, none. Because this is the same thing that, like I said, we saw on tape, we saw at his pro day, and if you've done research and evaluated Cam Newton, you're expecting to see this. This guy probably...
So this is not a surprise. Oh. Yesterday, some ball sailing. No one that's done their homework is sitting in the stands watching this guy going, oh my God, what has happened here? I have completely overvalued this guy. You know, I'm making a huge mistake.
No, not at all. Because when you watch tape, and probably throughout the entire year, now I haven't seen every throw Cam Newton made, but I'm willing to bet there's under 50 throws from that offense throughout the entire year that he's going to be asked to make in an NFL offense. So that doesn't mean he can't do it. Just means that he wasn't been asked to do it. And if you're not asked to do something, you don't have practice at something, of course you're going to struggle a bit. So the team that drafts him knows he's going to be a work in progress, but he's got all the capabilities to do whatever you ask of him at the next level. It's just, does he want to learn, and is he going to put in that work rate Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to win for you on Sunday?
Where do you have him as of the current moment in terms of draft projection in late April? Is he a top 10 guy in your opinion?
Yeah, I think honestly he's still the first quarterback that comes off the board. I think he can potentially go number one overall to Carolina. I think he'd be a great fit in Buffalo because he can spin the football through the winds up there, buy second lives behind that offensive line. But honestly, Joe, with the character concerns we have and the work that's going to take place, there's no way I would take him in the first round.
Missouri quarterback Blaine Gabbert, the only quarterback here who decided not to throw. And if you notice, not a lot of people talking about him this weekend. No matter what he did, I barely noticed the guy. I barely noticed him. He wasn't out there throwing. So you know what? We're going to pass over him for now. When he decides to do the workouts at his pro day, that's when he'll end up getting some pub. But there's not much to go on now. But let's talk about a guy that's looked good. A guy you've had at the top of your board for a while at the quarterback position, and that's Florida State's Christian Ponder. Comes in under the radar because he doesn't have the big name draw that some of these other guys might have, like a Newton. But played a lot of years at Florida State, has a lot of experience. Didn't play in a crazy, necessarily crazy system where, you know, there are some things that transpire to the next level. In addition, I'm looking at it right here, 4.65 in the 40. He flashed a little speed. He's looked good in all his position drills. And then you got a chance to watch him throw yesterday. Watching Ponder on the field live, what did you think?
I thought he just keeps getting better and better. When he came into the year, him and Jake Locker were talked about as the two first-round senior quarterbacks in this year's crop. And if you watch Ponder throughout the year, you think this is a mid- to late-round prospect. Again, you have to figure out why is he struggling so much. Well, he has surgery on his shoulder at the end of 2009. He hurts his elbow. He hurts his forearm, all on his throwing arm. Of course, the velocity is not going to be there. So it allowed defenses to put people up near the line, force them to throw outside the numbers. Eye level went down quicker. He's a guy who wants to go through his progressions and get the ball out quickly. Wasn't able to do that because he wasn't able to make all the throws. Towards the end of the year against Florida, did a much better job because the arm started to come back. Senior Bowl, great job, MVP in the game, arm strength's come back even more. Yesterday, he spun the football as well as any time I've seen him throughout his career. He's a winner, he's gutsy, he gets it from the shoulders up. He's the one guy who I think really has that it factor in this year's class and is the one guy I have convictions for, hence why I have him as the number one quarterback prospect on our board.
Entering this podcast, I set the over-under on times you say the words spin the football at 2.5. You've now said it twice, but unfortunately I've got no more quarterback questions left as we make our way through. So unless Nick Fairley is spinning the football these days, I think I'm going to lose on that one with the over. But back to Ponder, there was actually, before I started acting like a smartass, there actually was another question I had in regards to him. How about this for a theory? It's a deep quarterback class this year. There are a lot of teams in the NFL that could use a good quarterback. We hear a lot about Newton, but we also know that's a big investment for a guy that there are a few concerns. Gabbert, you know, similar situation. How good is this guy really? I mean, how much have we all really seen of him? He's vaulted up the charts, but a lot of people didn't watch Missouri football this year. I'm going to be honest about that. I didn't see all that much. I saw him play Oklahoma, and that was pretty much it. When they were playing Iowa in the bowl game, I was down at the Eagles because that was that crazy Tuesday night game. But enough about that. Is there a chance that no one's really talking about Ponder because a lot of guys really like him, and a lot of teams could say, why would we go after Newton when we might be able to get a really good value in Ponder late first, early second round? Yeah, you think that's possibly in play?
I think that's a great point. And remember last year, we can talk about Tim Tebow. After the Senior Bowl, he was a third, fourth round pick. After his pro day, he's second round pick. And then once we get to the draft, he ends up going in the first round. And with Ponder, you know, his roller coaster, he started low, first round pick, and then horrible year because of injuries, falls into that mid-round range, and now he's slowly starting to get himself back. Teams like his demeanor. He's accurate. He's come from a pro-style offense.
Smart guy.
Smart guy. He's effective in the three-step game. Plus, he was a three-star recruit coming out. He was thrown to the Wolves early before he should have played, got his teeth kicked in, and pretty much instead of whining and complaining about it, he decided to dust himself off, make himself better, improve his game. Teams like that, Moxie, and I think he's the kind of guy you want under center. I think he could end up going in that late first round range now.
That's certainly going to be an interesting story to watch as we work our way towards his pro day, Cam Newton's pro day, and eventually the NFL draft. Switching sides to the defensive side of the football, two guys that have been battling neck and neck for the top spot in their position, Nick Fairley, defensive tackle out of Auburn, Marcell Dareus, defensive tackle out of Alabama. Both had pretty good workouts. You got a chance to get a look at them this morning. Fairley turns in an unofficial 4.82, runs a little bit faster. Dareus turns in the 4.92. So, you know, I mean, the tenth of a point second, I guess you should say. You can hammer on that a bit, but these two guys are running sub-5s. These are defensive tackles running sub-2.5, both flashing the speed. Which of these two do you rank higher, and do you still feel that way based on where it was coming into the combine?
Oh, absolutely. I like Nick Fairley more because what we always talk about, the NFL is now a passing league. You need guys who can rush the passer. I think Fairley's a better pass rusher. They're both explosive athletes, but they're two different kind of athletes. Dareus is the more physical, push-pull guy. He's explosive off the snap, wants to get into your body, work the bull rush, and then shed. Fairley has the ability to knife his way into the backfield, slip blocks. He has a powerful arm over. He can club with both sides. He'll shed blocks that way. So I think Fairley's the better pass rusher. That's why I give him the edge.
Fairley's a top five guy, you see it.
Absolutely.
Where do you see Dareus? Could he sneak into the top five? There's a lot of talent up there, so is he more top 10, top 15? Where do you see him falling?
In my personal opinion, I would have him, I'd be more comfortable taking him top 15, but I think on draft day and the run of all these defensive linemen, plus teams that need these 34 guys, I think he goes top 10. Redskins could look at him, Cowboys could look at him, maybe a team that needs him, like the New England Patriots, trade those picks, get up and get him.
So these two, suffice it to say, are going to be off the board pretty quickly.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially.
Yeah.
All right, let's look to another positional battle we saw this weekend. This took place a few days ago at the wide receiver position. Another Alabama guy, Julio Jones, and A.J. Green from Georgia. Back and forth. Some people really like Jones. Some people really like Green. Now, everyone likes both of them, quite frankly, but which one do they like more? You've been a big fan of A.J. Green all along. Green comes in, he runs 4.5. He does everything he needs to do. He looks fine. But he doesn't really get a whole lot of hype. We didn't hear his name much this weekend because Jones kind of blew him away. Jones runs a 4.39 official and really put up some numbers in a lot of the drills he took part in after running. So he also looked good as we saw him on the field yesterday in his receiver drills. So when you sit here and evaluate these two, there's going to be a lot of hype we see this week of people vaulting Jones ahead of Green. You're a guy that had Green ahead of Jones. Are you going to be making a switch?
Absolutely not. And when I looked over my rankings, I have A.J. Green as the best prospect in the entire draft. Julio Jones was number 4. So I think they're both pretty good football players.
So you have them both rated very high.
Yeah, exactly. But when you're watching these guys yesterday, it was obvious in my opinion Julio Jones was the better, more physical athlete of the two. He's a guy that can get vertically better. He's more explosive off the line. He's going to be great in the three-step game. A.J. Green, though, when you watch him for a big guy, 6'3.5", more fluid, more sudden in and out of his breaks. I think he's going to be the long-term better route runner. He can go up and pluck the football. Gives you more ability in the big play part of the game because of his ability to go up and make plays on jump ball situations. I still like A.J. Green as the top overall prospect. Julio Jones could go off the board first, but just because he's a better athlete. Well, remember, Roy Williams was a better athlete than Larry Fitzgerald in that draft. And, you know, he had 1-2 good years, but once that athletic ability slips just a tad, he's not quite the same receiver. So I'm going to take A.J. Green. The tape was more impressive than Julio Jones, but I like both of these guys a lot. I don't think he can go wrong with
either. Both very talented guys that are going to produce at the next level.
Exactly.
Do you have players that are professional wide receivers now that you compare these guys to?
I think when you look at a guy like A.J. Green, the Fitzgerald is a pretty good comparison because of his ability to go up and get the football. And Fitzgerald's a fluid guy who's really made himself into a much better route runner. Julio Jones is more of that physical guy, the T.O., the Andre Johnson. Granted, I'm giving him a lot of high praise here.
I'm asking just in terms of style of play.
The style, I mean, he's a guy that can work in that three-step game like Andre Johnson, create separation, pluck the football, and then he's a bear to bring down in the open field. Plus, he's going to get after it as a blocker, a little more than A.J. Green. But the big playability of A.J. Green is why I give him the edge.
Talking to Julio Jones during his presser, we asked him who was the toughest corner he had to face in college. He said Patrick Peterson. The next day, we got a chance to talk to Patrick Peterson and ask him who he thought was the best receiver he's faced. He named both these guys immediately, and then everyone kind of prodded him a little bit and said, well, which one? He goes, and just before he gave an answer, he goes, you know what? I'm not answering that question. He goes, because I'm going to piss one of them off. I'm going to have to see him again, and they're going to be out to get me. It was an affable answer. He's an affable guy on the podium. We'll get to him more later. But high praise from the receivers in regards to Peterson, in regards to Peterson to the receivers, because they've all played against each other in the SEC. And that's, it's interesting to see that they all have the same level of respect. One thing Peterson said about these guys, Jones said about Peterson, doesn't talk any shit. Doesn't talk any trash, just goes about his business. So spoke very highly of him there. And speaking of Peterson, he's going to run tomorrow with the defensive back. So we haven't seen anything out of him yet except for his press conference. What do you expect from him tomorrow? Because another thing he said at his presser, he's trying to run 4.2.
Yeah, I think they had him time handheld at 4.20 at the LSU Pro Day this past year. I don't think he's going to run that fast, but I think he can definitely run in the 4.3 range. There's kind of these murmurs right now, Joe, about he's 6'1", 220. Does he have to move to safety? I think when he runs in that 4.3 range, everyone's going to be like, no, he'll be just fine playing corner. He can press you off the line. He can reroute consistently. He can turn and run. He's not only the best corner on my board, I think he's a top 5 pick.
Now, when you look at him, one of the things a lot of people like about his game is that he contributed in the kick return game for LSU last year. He had a few touchdowns. We saw it against North Carolina in the first game of the year. So he brings that element to a team as well. But shutdown corner is a valuable position. So would you see him, if you're going to invest the top 5 money to bring this guy in and play corner, you're not going to want him on special teams returning kicks, are you?
Well, I think it's going to be like Charles Woodson early in his career. When you need that big play, you better believe he's going to be back there.
Right. Like DeSean Jackson with the Eagles.
Exactly.
They usually don't use him, but when they need him in the big situation, they call him in.
I think so. And Peterson, we've seen that dynamic punt and kick return ability. When he gets his hands on the football, watch out. He can make people miss. He can accelerate into the open field. And all he needs is a step, and he can take it to the house.
Back to the day of Alabama, which seems to always be a topic when you and I are talking college football. Mark Ingram, the former Heisman Trophy winner at running back, runs 4.62. Now, bad 40s tend to make headlines all over the place. Why is this not a huge deal that Ingram's not cracking 4.6?
Well, he plays quick and he plays fast. And the biggest thing that people get washed away with fast times and running backs is that big plays in the NFL are created because guys are fast. That's not always the case, and most times it's not the case. You need to break tackles at the second level. You need to make people miss, and that's what Ingram does so well. He's got a great feel in tight areas. He can make people miss. He runs balance. He's sudden. He's physical through contact. Do I think he's going to go as high as Ryan Matthews last year, who went 11 overall to the Chargers? Absolutely not, because he was physical. He was a little faster, but I think Ingram's a much better prospect, and you're going to be able to get him in that mid to late portions of the first round now because of that 4.62 40 time.
So we're not gonna panic on the straight line speed in the 40-yard dash, because we've seen plenty of Ingram on tape, and the guy makes plays.
Absolutely, and that's one of the biggest reasons why the NFL is able to get so many of these late round gems at running back position. Arian Foster was a 4.6 guy.
He wasn't even drafted.
Terrell Davis was a 4.6 guy. They fall late.
I don't think he was drafted either.
I think he was a late round, sixth round or something like that.
Agree to disagree.
Yeah, but whatever. These guys can't run, so automatically they can't play in the NFL. And, you know, TD's going to probably go to the Hall of Fame. Arian Foster's your fantasy sleeper every year. So it is what it is.
Yeah, not really, but thanks for trying to hype me up. Appreciate it. Steven, give me the last name here, because I always mispronounce it. Paye,
yeah.
I got that right?
There you go, Joe.
I tried to put the little accent. Okay, never mind. My notes are obviously pretty good. Steven Paye, defensive tackle, Oregon State. We've talked about him a little bit before, especially back during the season, because he's disruptive in the Pac-10. Puts up 49 reps on the bench. New combine record, not by one rep, not by two reps, by four reps. A couple guys are tied at 45 reps going into this year. Arkansas guard Mitch Petras was one of them. He put up 45 last season. Paye comes in and puts up 49 reps. But he does it on a Sunday, so it doesn't get nearly the love and the press that it should. Whatever you make of these events that are done here, and whether or not you say they're important, watching a guy put up 225 pounds 49 times is impressive no matter what it means. Now, you take a look at that. For people that don't know Paye all that well, tell them what they'd be getting if he ends up on their team, how he projects. Give us some notes on him.
Well, you're getting this tough former rugby player from Tonga who his upside is tremendous at the next level. He's a three technique at Oregon. He can also play some nose because he's got a good anchor. But when you watch him on tape, the one thing that sticks out besides his initial explosion and first step, he has the most violent punch, which makes a lot of sense because that strong bench press of any defensive lineman in the country. He's going to continue to develop, continue to get better. Hurt himself at the Senior Bowl on that third play of practice. Messed up his meniscus, I believe, in his knee. Decided to play through it. Had a quiet first day. Realizes that he needs to have surgery on it, get it fixed up. So we're seeing a guy that on tape was a first-round pick, could end up falling outside the first round because he doesn't have the ability to compete during the postseason. If a team like the Bears or the Colts can get this guy late in the first, early in the second, I mean, he's going to be an absolute stud in that cover two type defense.
One more day of coverage left here in Indianapolis before we wrap up the 2011 NFL Scouting Combine. He's Wes Bunning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Joe Fordball. Wes, for all the radio and video you've done this weekend, thank you so much for just taking a few minutes out to sit down with me. I guess at this point, I really have to thank you when you work me into your schedule.
Well, anytime, Joe. You know, anything for you, buddy.
You made a couple nice picks, too, this weekend. We won't get into the details, but we all had a little contest, and you were on point with a lot of your picks in terms of who would run faster, who would do this, who would do that. The Tyrod Taylor pick. Tyrod Taylor faster than Cam Newton. Great job there. But thanks a lot, buddy. We're going to wrap this thing up. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We're going to be rolling out more of these in the future. There's going to be more video coming on the way as well, as we've got a lot in store to keep you guys in the loop, making our way towards the 2011 NFL Draft. Wes Bunning, I'm Joe Fordball. Thanks for tuning in. See you soon.